I've developed an axiom that says every overnight success is at least a decade in the making.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. Today, we're going to get into how to create a company that people don't want to leave. You can have a great product, smart team, necessary financial backing, yet still fail. Why is that? I have CEO Jason Andrews here with me today to discuss, co-founder and CEO of Orbeet, the innovative human spaceflight company. Jason, thanks so much for joining me today. And it's not often we have a guest on that has such an out of this world concept. So tell us a little bit more about Orbeet and what it's all about.
Sure. Thanks, Carol. I'm super excited to be here. So Nicholas Gomes and I co-founded Orbeet back in 2019. Maybe it helps to give a little bit of a background. Mm-hmm. I'm a serial space entrepreneur.
Yep.
Grew up building a company that built satellites called LeoStella. Exists today. I built a space transportation company to launch small satellites. These are satellites that weren't large enough to justify their own rocket. So built that business called Spaceflight. Also built a geospatial intelligence company called Black Sky. So when Nicholas, also a serial entrepreneur, and I were looking at what the next big thing is with major investments in launch infrastructure. This is the likes of Elon Musk with SpaceX and mm-hmm. building Starship, his vehicle that will take humanity to Mars. Jeff Bezos building his infrastructure, New Shepard for suborbital tourism, and New Glenn to launch humanity to the moon. It was clear that there was a need and an opportunity. Historically, NASA prepares government employees to be astronauts, but no one trains the private citizens. And like any transportation business, there's an infrastructure layer, and then there's a service layer, a human-centric mm-hmm. service layer. So think Boeing and Airbus versus Singapore Airways, Qatar Airways, pick your favorite airline. Mm-hmm. We are really the space line focused on the human experience and developing the technologies to do that. So what Orbeet does is educate the general public about this exciting emerging future that is right around the corner. We also train people who are currently preparing to fly to space either on a suborbital or orbital mission. And as the industry evolves, we will actually operate the missions in partnership with the vehicle developers to complete these missions. So it's very much at the beginning of a new industry, not only a new company, which is always doubly challenging.
Mm-hmm. So is this really what the impetus was behind you and Nicholas starting the company, your inspiration? I mean, was it because nobody's doing what's going to be necessary in training people, especially civilians, to fly?
Yeah, I would say, you know, you interview a lot of entrepreneurs and leaders.
Mm-hmm, I do.
Everyone has a superpower. I would say what my superpower is, or what our superpower is with Nicholas, is seeing an opportunity. And I like to say going from zero to one, taking that idea, mapping it out, turning it into a business plan, mm-hmm. putting together not only the product and finding product market fit, but also then the financial backing to support it and then building the team. So fortunately or unfortunately, we picked a big opportunity and a big challenge. Mm-hmm. So we are building not only the company and the industry at the same time. And mm-hmm. it's what we found. I guess as an entrepreneur, I've developed an axiom that says every overnight success is at least a decade in the making. I think this is true of every successful company. If you look mm-hmm. at their first 10 years, it was scraping, clawing to get to existence. I mean, you talk about SpaceX and everyone thinks that's a massive success. But if you look at SpaceX's first decade, it was nothing but failure until they finally flew the Falcon 9 successfully in 2010 after starting the company, I think, in 2001. We are at year five or six, so we're only halfway there. We got into this scene that the real need was to build a location for private commercial space education and training. And as we got into it, it's also really advanced to educating a broader market and going and meeting our customers where you find them. Space travel, like air travel in the early days, I mean, you jump back 100 years, you go back to the 1920s, that was the first decade where commercial air travel really existed in a successful way. But at the time, it was exclusively for the rich. Most people were getting around, if you're wealthy, by trains, and if you weren't, by still basic cars and horse and buggy. So we're at the same point today where we are engaging ultra high net worth individuals and letting them know that space travel is something that they can do. So it's an interesting and fun time.
So you're about, what, 5 full-time right now and a handful or so of consultants at the company?
That's exactly right. Probably goes to 10 by the time you pull in all the consulting team. We're very, being serial entrepreneurs, we've learned to be very thrifty. So it's like, how can you get the maximum out of this handful of people and only scale when we need to scale?
Yeah.
And usually you're investing revenues and profits versus VC money to do that, because VC money is very expensive.
Yes, that it is. So, you know, given where you are employee-wise right now, have you had any turnover at all? And if not, or if it's very, very low, you know, what would you say to how you create a company that where people want to stay?
That's a great question. I would say from the core, we haven't had any turnover, but around the peripheries, we've had turnover. And that's because I think every company goes through a certain phase and people have certain needs. It's a two-way relationship with your employees and the company.
Right.
Being in the very early days of a startup is by definition change and chaos. You're pivoting, you're evolving, you're tweaking, and there's ups and downs. And that I've started 5 different companies and they've all been the same. And that isn't for everybody, that environment. It is a sense of adventure. And I think where we've had turnover is not because they didn't love the mission or the vision. Where we've had the turnover is because people needed more structure and predictability. And as hard as
should
we
be
try,
a startup.
we're not at that phase. You know, come back when you're 20 people and or 100 people.
Yeah.
So I think it's finding that. And so as maybe the second part of your question is how do you create an environment that everybody enjoys? So you have to spend a lot of time finding people that will thrive in that environment. And there's the classic, you know, get the people on the bus and then figure out what seat they sit in. And I've seen that time and time again. And so I think that's also key to success of any entrepreneur is when you find that right employee, get them on the bus and then figure out how to get the most out of them and build a successful relationship.
Yeah, that's really great. And you know, certainly, you know, if I look back, you know, just listening to you talking about some people just, you know, aren't a fit to do what you're doing right now. And I think back to, you know, years and years ago, early on in my search career, you know, and of course, what I learned moving throughout that career was that, you know, you can't take somebody, you know, when I started in search was when IBM was having the very first round of layoffs ever, right? So people who'd been career IBM employees who would hang up on headhunters prior to that were begging for headhunters to talk to them. And the interesting thing was that for them in particular, it took them a minimum of 2 to 3 jobs till they found what they actually were looking to do because they'd been in this really like bubble, right? And you also can't take somebody out of a big company. I mean, whatever that big company is, you know, SAP, Oracle, I don't care. You know, there's a zillion of them out there. Take somebody out of a large company and put them into a startup.
Yeah.
Not everybody is startup material. And if you can't bob and weave and deal with the ups and downs, then you have no business being in a startup. None. And even at 20 people, as you mentioned, still may be too early. Because there's 100%. Still not a lot of infrastructure.
You need 100%. I mean, they need to be 100% a self-starter. The point is not like, it's like, here's the objective. You go figure it out.
Yeah.
There's no one here that has the time to mentor you or tell you what you do to do your job. You need to keep yourself 100% busy. And if you accomplish your job in the first half of the day, then you automatically need to think, okay, what's the next 3 things I need to go do to achieve the overall vision of the company?
Right.
And those make for great employees in general,
but
especially those are the types of people you need in the early phases of a startup.
Yeah. So, you know, to as you said, you know, you've founded 5 companies. What do you believe? I mean, I know what I believe, but what do you believe you have to possess to be a successful entrepreneur, in your opinion? Like, what are the things you need?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think the difference between success and not success is actually pretty narrow. Mm-hmm. But what I find is a lot of founders out there who have, the difference between success and not success is you need to be able to master several things at once. You need to have the vision and leadership to inspire people to follow you into the war, because it is a war. Every day is a battle for survival, and you have to pivot and adapt, which we've just talked about. At the same time, you also need to have the right vision for the market and the product market fit. Because you could have the best technical idea, but if it's not going to generate money and there's no market need for it, it's not going to happen.
Right.
And then
that's the distinction between need and want.
Yeah. I love to say engineers are great at coming up with solutions in search of a problem.
Yeah, right.
As an example, being an engineer, an aerospace engineer by training. I think the next element you need is you need to have the management ability to take that vision and turn it into reality, hire the people, marshal the resources, whether that's fundraising or sales teams, to then go and execute and get past that infancy. People have written many books about how 90% of companies fail in the first 5 years, and of the 10 that make it, 10% that make it, those 90% of those fail in the next 5 or 10 years. And having lived that, I think it's very true. We've had 9 lives. And which comes to the final element is you need a little bit of luck. You need something to break your way at some point in that process in order to be ultimately successful. So usually I come across other entrepreneurs that have, you know, I think I rattled off 4 things, you know, 2, maybe 3 of those, but rarely do you have 4. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference between the ultimate success and failure.
You talked about a little bit about finances. How have you funded the company?
So Orbeat, we've done 2 rounds of financing. Of my different companies, I built the first 2 organically. We just went out and found customers. Awesome. I should say the first company, we went out and found customers. My background was actually, I do have an aerospace engineering degree. My first job out of college was a startup space transportation company back in the 1990s. I describe it as SpaceX before SpaceX.
Yeah, right.
The whole market opportunity, believe it or not, 30 years ago was about darkening the skies with satellites to do internet from space. And the technology and launch infrastructure just wasn't there. You couldn't compete with terrestrial. Here we are 30 years later with the launch of Starlink and Amazon's Kuiper, and we're finally there from a technology standpoint. So that company ultimately failed.
Right. Too early.
I left, tried to get out of the aerospace industry and get an MBA, failed miserably at both because people started calling me and saying, hey, I heard you left. And we were at a leading company at the time. And can you help me out? And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything. So sure. And I scraped together enough consulting work that it could do more than I could do. And we hired a few employees and built the first company. And it was off that company, you know, a decade later, that we built the second company, Spaceflight, where it was an idea. There was a market. It was very much untested. It didn't exist before. But I was able to leverage my first company, meaning my own wealth and resources, to build the second company. And so we didn't take outside financing until the third company, which was BlackSky. At the time, we were building small, cutting-edge imaging satellites for the United States Army. This is back in 2013. We were launching everybody else's imaging satellites, but we felt we had a better product and a better overall plan. And so I started a third company called BlackSky, which was ultimately successful because it's public on the New York Stock Exchange today. But that was the first time I went out and raised financing. And that was very much an adventure. Raised the first $200 million through 4 rounds. So I've done it both ways, organically and through VC financing with Orbeat. There was pros and cons of the financing. There were some challenges along the way. So both Nicholas and I, being serial entrepreneurs, we have gone out and raised outside financing. We've also put a ton of our own money into the company on the cap table. But we have stayed away from traditional VCs up to this point and focused on friends, families, and ultra high net worth individuals.
Yeah.
So we've raised $6 million to date, and we're going to go out and raise more money, and it might be our first institutional round. We'll see. Space is a capital intensive endeavor. But I would say, going back to what we've learned, we're very much focused on getting to revenue as fast as possible. We're out selling products today. And I encourage all entrepreneurs, you know, a gift and a curse is raising a lot of money early. What I see, especially if it's pre-revenue, because people get excited, they look at this money, they want to build the machine because it makes them feel big and successful and powerful. And ultimately, it usually distracts from getting to revenue. Right. And it also builds cost and infrastructure. And it's a flywheel effect. Once it's there, it's hard to get rid of. And it just requires more money, time, and energy to keep it going, which usually means dilution from outside investors and loss of control, ultimately.
Have you, you know, when you think about institutional funding, have you, I mean, is part of that thinking about just going out and getting a giant business loan? Can you even get one as big as the money you would need to avoid venture capital?
That's a great question. There's pros and cons of debt versus equity.
I know.
Equity, you give up a little bit of control. Debt, you can lose your whole company because they're usually backstopped by the assets of the business. There's pros and cons, I think, it's situational.
So for aspiring entrepreneurs that are listening, what advice would you give them to think about before diving in blindly into a company?
We've had a lot of employees who watch what I do and what we do with Nicholas and previously when with my wife when we were running the company. And they think they can go do it. And my advice is you should. You're a really smart, intelligent, capable person, but you should, you know, go but fail early, fail fast.
Yeah.
And understand that it's much harder than it looks from the outside. And entrepreneurs are, especially successful entrepreneurs, are a special breed because it goes from a job to a livelihood. It's like having kids. When they cry at 2 a.m, it doesn't matter how tired you are, you still have to get up and deal with that. You may be have to cancel every vacation you've ever had. You may have to go years without a salary. I've done all of those things to make the business successful. You know, there's a joke someone told me early on, you know, there's three farm animals sitting in a barn. You know, the chicken, the cow, and the pig. And they said, we should have breakfast. And they said, it's a great idea. And the cow says, great, I'll bring the milk. And the chicken says, great, I'll bring the eggs. And they turn to the pig and says, great, you bring the bacon. I mean, it's kind of, you know, you have to want it as bad as anything. So that would be my advice. Go for it. That's my advice. But just know that it'll be all consuming. But it'll be very rewarding.
Yeah, very good. So let's talk a little bit about the training that you're selling. When we talked prior, you had said it was somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 30 to 500K. And that's a big, you know, that's a big divide. You know, it's not just like some company selling an enterprise deal versus a smaller deal, or is it? Right. So how has that changed? What's the difference in the 30K to the 500K?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, maybe let me frame the industry right now a little bit. We are in the early days of this human spaceflight revolution, where probably all of your listeners, they say human spaceflight and they think of Apollo astronauts, which is you know, very much true. It's historically been people with the right stuff, usually with a military background or a scientific background, going to space for a very specific purpose. But with advancements in space transportation, it's now available to everybody. And the experience is you can go to space on a SpaceX Dragon capsule and circle the planet for 3 to 5 days, but that's a $50, $60 million ticket. You can go to the International Space Station. It's a little bit more than that. Or you can go up to the edge of space and see the curvature of the Earth, experience the overview effect. And that's on the order of $1 to $2 million. And you can do that with Blue Origin or Virgin Galactic. Now, you think of space and you think of the right stuff and you think physical preparation. It's actually physically not that challenging to go to space. But what really gets interesting is the mental and then the spiritual preparation. So as we, you know, space is an amazing place, but it is also a unique environment because of zero gravity, what it does to the physical body, how you need to relearn how to move about a vehicle or a capsule or a starship. And so it takes preparation so that you get the maximum amount out of your investment. So if you're going to spend $1 to $2 million, it makes sense to spend $50,000 on training to maximize the return on that overall investment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you're going to go to orbit, there's more tools, techniques you need to learn in order to live and work in space. And so it's more involved. The training's more complicated, and that takes longer, and therefore it costs more. So that's when you get into the multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. At the same time, it's a few percentage points of the overall cost of the mission. But it's also a way to learn about, am I interested in going to space? Do I like the effects of zero gravity? And you can test that and simulate that on a parabolic aircraft. The high G of launch and reentry, it's a very short period of time. And it's very doable by even 90-year-olds like William Shatner, who went and did it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's good to go experience it before you feel it the first time on a space launch. So you anticipate it and you learn, again, tools and techniques for how you tense up your body and to counteract the flow of blood and everything else. So training is a fun adventure. We define it as an adventure sport, but we've also, we have our experienced train fly program. You know, astronaut training is exactly what it says. It's pretty intensive. So we've also developed what we call space experiences, which is more of a traditional holiday around a space theme where we integrate elements of astronaut training. You don't get certified. It's not full astronaut training, but you get experience elements of what space flight would be like so that you can see if it's for you. And what you end up doing, like any new experience, is you actually learn a lot of lessons and techniques for how to use these tools in your everyday life. It's about mental preparation. It's about stress management. It's about team building.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who have done our programs actually come away going, wow, I used it last week in this situation and it was fantastic. So again, it's fun to build something that has never existed before. And we're at the very beginning of humanity moving into low Earth orbit and beyond. And let me just say why, because that's probably the next question. You know, there was a flight 2 days ago of Starship, the Starship 10 flight, which most people probably didn't even know about or watch.
I didn't.
But SpaceX is developing the infrastructure that will radically improve access to space and the cost of access to space. So that the experience today I described, $50 million in a capsule going around low Earth orbit, you know, that's for a certain set of clientele. But imagine you could go on a luxury yacht in low Earth orbit for 5 days for less than $10 million for a stateroom. And that is really where we're going with Starship. And it could be much, much less. They're designing the economics so that it could potentially be under $1 million. So this future, you know, is within the next decade, potentially within the next handful of years. So it's a very exciting time.
That's fantastic. So, you know, as I'm listening to you, it reminds me, I think the first time we talked, I said, you know, there was a great series that this reminds me of that was on HBO. It's called Avenue 5. And, you know, this guy, this really rich dude, you know, builds this thing and it has all these consequences of things that went wrong on it. It's really pretty funny, but it makes me think about that, you know, to your point, going on, you know, this lower Earth orbit vacation for a week, right? And this is what these people had planned to do, is go on vacation. So for those out there who haven't watched it, it's pretty funny. Jason, what would you say is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now?
I would say the biggest bottleneck to growth is people not even understanding that space travel is something that they can do. So it's a broader market development and education. And so as we've gotten into our business, there's products there, but people are like, why would I do that? You know, it's more, how do you go meet the customers at something they are already engaged in? And so we're spending a lot more time with luxury brands at events around automotive racing, yachts, private aviation, where the customers already are and they're already engaged from a brand standpoint.
Got it.
And it's like, hey, did you know space is something you can do and even do it tomorrow, and sit with them and talk about what it is. So it's building that funnel is the challenge. I think the industry is very advanced from the infrastructure development and technology development. Where it is struggling is in the customer pipeline development.
Yeah. So do you go to a giant convention, or are you going to just, you know, like you said, yacht shows or whatever that might be, car things, and getting a booth there and, you know, generating interest? Or how are you getting the word out in those circumstances?
It's a great question. So what we're doing a couple of things. We spend a lot of time at F1. I'll tell you that. Monaco Grand Prix, Abu Dhabi, yep. Miami. Those are key events where our clientele is already there. They're interested in high-risk endeavors. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say space travel is high-risk. It's just, you know, it's not low-risk at the moment. But people are interested in adventure and technology and are already spending lots of money. We also then partner with clothing companies and jewelry companies. You know, there's a lot of watch collectors that are into
high-end watches,
high-speed something racing, whether it's boats or cars or something else. And space is still a very small market right now. If this industry had 200 more customers who wanted to go to space, that would be groundbreaking. You know, the number of people that fly in orbit, which is around the planet on an annual basis, from a commercial standpoint, is still, you can count on your fingers. With this change in the price point and the experience, we hope it can get to 1,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not very many people. But if you think about it, $10 million a seat times 1,000 people, that's a $10 billion a year market, which is pretty good.
And it's better than a sharp stick in the eye.
It's just scratching the $2 trillion luxury travel market.
Right.
So it's the communication problem.
So we're talking about the bottleneck being getting the word out to the right people. So would that be, if you had to identify one thing that if solved would make the biggest impact on your business growth, would that be it?
Yeah. Engaging in digital marketing, partnerships, building sales channels, all classic 101 business building. Mm-hmm. But it was really trying to figure out what is the challenge of the industry. And that's the challenge of the moment. Because we have invested a lot in events to send people to space. I know the other participants like a SpaceX and Blue Origin and Virgin have done that. There is market traction. Blue's flown close to 100 people and probably has a couple hundred in backlog. Virgin has 600 to 800 people in backlog. These are for suborbital experiences.
Yes.
These are going up to the edge of space,
right,
getting your astronaut certificate and coming back. But the number of people going to orbit is still
small,
a handful of people.
Yeah.
But as, again, like anything, as the technology and the experience improves, the price point improves, it's really, we think we're at the right place at the right time, building the infrastructure and the client relationship to make this industry successful.
So we talked a little bit about your 5 full-time, and does that include you and Nicholas, the 5 full-time?
Or is that yes.
Okay. So who basically the jobs of those other 3 people that are with you full time?
Well, it's just what we talked about, sales and marketing.
Okay.
We have Brianna Romes, our chief training officer. We're bringing on board chief medical officer. It's what we need to execute the business we have now. And then on the consultant side, it's around executing our existing business. So we have these space experiences throughout the year. We have our astronaut trainings throughout the year, but it's not ongoing. It's around specific activation. So we'll do 6 events on a year next year, and that's what the rest of the staff supports. And as we ramp our revenue, we bring more people on. But going back to what you asked the question, like what's so important about a company at this phase? I think it's having a very clear mission and vision that people can rally around and invest their lives around. Because it really, at this phase, everybody's part of the founding team, it feels like. You know, early on, you usually get disproportionate size stock options. You're there because of the mission and the vision.
Right.
And it's to the extent you can, keep that through the life of the company. You know, we're in the space industry. SpaceX is the biggest player today. And they've had a very clear mission from day one back in 2000. We're going to Mars. We're building the technology and infrastructure to send people to Mars. And it is admirable to watch from the outside. It's very much a cult-like environment. They accomplish things that no one in the industry has accomplished since the 1960s when we put humans on the moon. So it's an exciting time and an exciting company.
Anything else? If you kind of just look at the overall, you know, dozen-ish or, you know, 10, 12 people that you have, is there anything when you look around and go, gosh, this is still really missing for us? This is something that we really need, or we really want to do this, but we're just not at that point yet. From a kind of a staffing, whether it be consulting, I refer that as fractional, right? Kind of, you know, or full-time, you know, permanent people.
We're very careful not to outgrow our revenue and our funding. And if we were just a little bit bigger, I think we could accomplish, have more velocity around our sales channels, our partnerships. Mm-hmm. But then if you look at the ancillaries of where this goes, is we're really trying to build a platform for human spaceflight where, because we're at the in the funnel building phase, we sit upstream from the people operating the vehicles, we have the most throughput. And if you think about people who want to test a new space glove or a new type of space food or a new medical device that could be operated in space, we provide the best set of subjects who are passionate about that domain want to be partners in that. And these are all things that we wish we could do today that we just don't have the bandwidth to do or the funding to do. And even if, let's say, someone handed us $20 million tomorrow, given our scars and our experience, it's not clear we would just turn this dial and ramp that up. Because it's really important to build the company at the same time we're building the client and the revenue. Mm-hmm. But as far as the partnerships, I wish we had more resources to do that. If you think about brand partnerships, you know, we want Orbeet. One of the most successful brands out there, and it's a little ironic, is NASA. Because NASA doesn't do any marketing. You know, they're a government agency.
Oh, right.
But if we think 10 years in the future, we want, when people think space, they think NASA. We want, when people think space in 2035, we want them to think Orbeet, because it's the platform for everything space. If you want to be involved in space, you want to be involved with Orbeet. So we have big visions and we just wish we could go faster. But that's every entrepreneur.
Well, it is. And, you know, again, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, well, this is the catch 22 that every entrepreneur deals with.
Yeah.
Really, right? And you know, and that's why I asked the question, because it's, you know, you want to get people to know who you are. Well, that takes marketing, you know, a lot of digital. People have to find out who you are, being on podcasts, things like that. But it also means sales, right? So, you know, do you say, you know, you're thinking about another round of your next round of funding. No, do you just go out and find that maybe a little bit sooner? Or, you know, bring in more fractionals that you can't afford because you're not as expensive as, not that anybody's being paid a ton. Nobody should, you know, no one's ever paid a ton early on, unless they've taken a boatload of venture capital, maybe then, but you know.
Yeah.
That's
exactly right. We're to a point, you know, you flip that question around. At some point, if the market is starting to take off, if you don't have the capital, then you're behind. Mm-hmm. So that's the flip side of the conversation.
That's right.
I think.
So do you have it and not need it till you need it?
Yeah.
Or do you wait until, oh shit, we should have gotten this 6 months ago?
Yeah, no one has the perfect crystal ball.
I know. It's $64,000 question.
Another VC, you know, one of my investors says being early is the same thing as being wrong. You know, we started this company in 2019 and we thought we were late and turns out we were early. So we've managed to, I guess, you know, develop the market and stay alive to this point while we're now. And the question is, when's the inflection point? Because when it comes very fast. Mm-hmm. And it feels like, yes, we should be bringing on more resources over the next 12 months.
Yeah. I just want to step back before we finish up to, you know, getting that word out, you know, at yacht shows, at F1, at, you know, all these different places that you've been going to. When did you start doing this? What kind of traction have you gained in that? And is it enough? And if you don't get it resolved, how's that going to impact your sales and growth?
Yeah. So
do you go out of business? Do you fail?
Well, maybe reflecting back, when we started the business, like every startup starts someplace and sometimes you have to pivot. You know, we thought we were late to the party and therefore we focused on building a facility to do training for all these future commercial human astronauts. And what we realize is A, we're early, and B, the market's also turned on us somewhere in that journey in 22, 23 timeframe. So now it's like, okay, let's actually focus on building the business. We engage with customers and clients and quickly learned in partnership with the other operators in the business that the funnel was the most important thing. So we pivoted and developed our experience train fly program at the end of 2024. And as part of that, really got out, and it was actually through client interactions in 24, including F1 and other things. I'll give you a specific example. I mean, I'm on, when you go to Monaco Grand Prix, there's a bunch of yachts right along the track. I was on one of those, one of those yachts, in fact, one of the best yachts. And there was 100 people,
one of the all best our customers
on the yacht. And I went to all of them and said, hey, I'm Jason. I sent people to space. And they all said, what?
Yeah.
And it was engaged in a conversation that went something like this. I didn't know I could go. I don't know where to start. I don't know if it's right for me. So that became clear, like, okay, we need to rethink. This industry needs to rethink how it goes about our go-to-market plan and strategy. And out of that came our experience train fly program. It's a grind. I mean, any startup is a grind to stay alive long enough to make it happen. I mean, we're fortunate in that Nicholas and I, this isn't our first rodeo. So we have certain means and we're major investors in the company.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, Orbeat's not an existential thing at the moment. We can go on indefinitely. But at the same time, you know, you have to show return on investment. Every investor does. But we're seeing that now. We're seeing, now that we've pivoted in the digital marketing, we're seeing the market traction. Interestingly, you know, we're investing a lot more in digital marketing, and our cost per click is way below industry average just because people see the content and like space. I'll click on that. So that's just an example that the interest is out there. But at the same time, as you brought up before, our products started thousands of dollars, if not $30,000, $20,000. So it's not for everybody. So it's it's sifting through and finding the right people that are interested in what we're doing.
Well, I mean, that's the ideal customer profile, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's exactly. You know, every entrepreneur better know what their ICP is.
Yep.
Jason, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to talk about?
No, I want to just thank you for the opportunity. As you know, because you interview a lot of entrepreneurs, you get us talking and we could talk forever. So
well,
let's go on. But it's exciting to meet your community and share pain and suffering and exhilaration along the way, and can't encourage, I think the service you provide in talking about these lessons learned to everybody is invaluable. And I encourage everybody to try. Maybe on an anecdote, I think I've probably had at least 20, if not 40 employees leave and go start their own businesses. And only one has been really successful out of that. So it talks about how hard it is.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it wasn't because they weren't great people. They were fantastic people, but it takes it's a different breed to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And again, we could go on about that because I've been done nothing but work with startups and small companies my whole career. So boy, I feel like I've seen everything, every mistake every entrepreneur has made and foolish, you know, decisions and yada, yada. So, but we'll save that for the next conversation.
There we go. That sounds great.
Well, Jason Andrews, co-founder and CEO of Orbeat, it's been a real pleasure. I love this. I hope we get lots of great feedback on this show.
Thank you, Carol. Happy to come back anytime.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.